Hello and welcome to Front End Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Allison Lucan is here.
Hello.
What is up, Allison? There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's nice to have like hockey stuff to talk about. Are you recalibrated to anticipating a season, or does it still feel weird that it's Christmas and you're talking training camp and preseason stuff?
I mean, it definitely feels weird for sure. It's not only the timing, but there were so many obstacles, and now they're quote unquote all solved, and it'll settle in. But it's also going to be a different year. We know that, and that's going to be, again, these are not the problems that matter most in our world right now, but it's going to be different. So we have to get used to that as well.
Indeed. So as you probably know, the Blue Jackets, the NHL, are hoping that each team can play 56 games. And they're not doing a bubble anymore, or two bubbles as they did to finish last season. They're going to do sort of, I don't know, can we call them mini temporary bubbles, Allison? So a team's going to go.
Traveling. Yeah. Traveling bubbles.
The travel bubble, road bubble.
Twubble?
Ooh. Yeah, I don't
know. We're in trouble in the twubble.
Or is it a road bubble, rubble? God willing.
A twubble, rubble.
Maybe we can avoid that.
God.
You've seen the protocols. You've seen what they're thinking. So Columbus is not going to go to Nashville and come back the next day. They're going to go knockout two. They're not going to be at home for one game and head out on the road. The team that's coming in is going to stay there and play a couple games. It looks like the schedule is going to have them playing at minimum back-to-back against the same team over and over again, with the exception of maybe, I think, late in the season they could be knocking off a four in a row against teams. Who knows where it's going to settle exactly. It should be released later today. What do we know about it at this point, Allison, and how do you think this is going to work from a protocol and safety standpoint?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we know is that there are some initial details out there, and then as has been in the process baked in before, you know, teams had a little bit of time to request changes once they saw the first draft, and we'll see this final later today, but it's looking like Columbus will open on the road against Nashville, and as you mentioned, it's going to be chunks of games against the same opponent in a row. And, you know, the hidden benefit that you hinted at there already is that we're no longer going to have this play Friday night, pack up, fly out, play on the road Saturday, the added strain mentally and physically of that. So there's going to be a little bit less of a physical burden in that sense. But on the flip side, we're looking at most weeks having at minimum three games, if not four.
Yep.
And so it's going to be quite the ride. Not sure that they're going to see any one team four games in a row, it doesn't seem, but definitely two in a row. And so that little hidden bit of rivalry and competition that John Tortorella spoke to you about in your recent interview with him, I'm going to be really intrigued to see that develop as well.
Yeah, and so that's one thing I wanted to get into here. So this game has changed so much in the last 10 years, especially, really changed dramatically in 20 years in terms of the fighting, in terms of the how nasty and physical the games can get. And I'm wondering where this is going to go. I think 20 years ago, if you would have had a team play a repetitive back-to-backs and face the same team eight times in the span of 56 games. So they used to play Central Division opponents eight times, but they did that over 82 games. This is going to be just a heavy concentration against the same team. If you did this 15, 20 years ago, there would be laundry all over the ice, right? There would be fights. There would be teams trying to set the physical standard of how these games are going to be played. This league has changed so much, and this is not a complaint. I'm just wondering where that's going to lead us when you're playing the same team over and over again. And do you think it's going to make for more contentious games? John Tortorella was wondering this as well. Or is it going to be monotonous? Is it going to be, these guys again? Because the guys don't get their backs up like they used to. These games aren't the bludgeoning, last man standing type feel that they used to have. The game's changed in many ways for the better. I just wonder how that's going to apply to this schedule for this year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that the from an emotional investment perspective, I think that's not going to come just from the sheer nature of the schedule. I mean, we have seen teams that that play together against each other a lot, and there's a holdback, and players talk about this. There's a holdback until, quote unquote, the games really matter.
Yep.
In the playoffs. And particularly this Blue Jackets team, they focus on themselves. They don't focus on the opponent. Now, I think there's going to be intensity in every single one of those Tampa Bay games, no question.
Yeah.
I think that there could be a little bit of heat in the Florida series. We'll see. I don't know that there's going to be the emotional investment. What I'm really curious to see, particularly when you're seeing teams not just this frequently, but serial in order, 1, 2, maybe 3 or 4 games in a row, the tactics of it. Mm-hmm. Because that is the other side of what we see in postseason play, is the strategic maneuvering by coaches, both from a lineup and a X's and O's perspective. And how much does that change when these coaches only have to focus on 7 other teams and will be able to see instant results and play more almost in like a lab setting of, how do we beat this team? Oh, tweak it this way. Now, how do we beat this team? That's what I'm going to be interested to see.
So you think there's going to be more coaching rather than less coaching? Because I wondered if there would be less coaching. It's these guys again. You know what their thing is. But there maybe there's more coaching. It's these guys again. Here's what we learned just 12 hours ago that we can apply now. In the regular season, if you don't have a back-to-back, the things you learned 12 hours ago against an opponent are kind of out the window, because you're moving on to the next opponent. Maybe you remember for next time. But where do you think that goes, Allison? More coaching, less coaching?
Yeah, I think that, you know, particularly with the Blue Jackets, the team we're talking about, I think we have to hear what John Tortorella said to you, which is there's definitely going to be more coaching, in my opinion, from a special teams perspective.
Yeah.
Because that is something you can tweak. What I think is going to be the counter, not that I wish this for any team, is going to be the health of these rosters, because it is very possible that you are playing the same jerseys 2 games in a row, but the lineup is completely different due to health concerns, or, you know, having to pull players out of the lineup out of just total caution, or, you know, waiting on a test result or what have you. So that's going to be interesting. I think more coaching on special teams for sure. Otherwise, I don't think 5-on-5 play, at least for this squad, this Blue Jacket squad, is a thing that's really going to start happening.
Yeah. You know what? I don't believe him, though, when he says we don't talk a lot about the other team.
Oh, it's a total lie.
I think they talk about the other team as much as anybody does. I think it's, to him, it's what you say to make your team feel better about itself. In other words,
right?
It's an allow. He doesn't want to allow. He's not going to allow the other team the time to suggest that he pays attention to them. I think that's just how the old man's wired.
Well, and I think too, I thought that there was something really telling in his interview with you, and something I obviously obsess about way too much, just from a leadership perspective, was his comments about trying to find the right words.
Yes.
What is going to be the rallying cry for this squad? And I think that that is hints to me at what you were just saying as well. I think they absolutely talk about the opponent. But I think it's how they talk about the opponent is what is important to John Tortorella. It's not, and let's pick an easy example here, it's not how do we stop Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. It's what are we going to control to execute our game plan against this opponent.
Yeah.
And that's a subtle difference, but mentally it's a big difference. And so that is what I think he really focuses on. Because the players will talk about prepping for a game, and we know they talk about the other team.
Pros, right.
But it's how it's framed, and it's keeping that focus on control what we can control, do what we can do, stay within ourselves. Framing discussion about the opponent in that way is what I think he is really harping on every time he says that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I like to... He refers to the Tampa Bay Lightning as the team that won the cup last year.
Wonderful. Love it. I love it so much.
Like he can't
bring
say
it
the,
on.
He can't say the words, you know?
Here for it. Here for it.
So you know all this, I think. Seven teams in their division along with Columbus, so eight. 56 games they'll be playing. Those division opponents quickly: Carolina, Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, Florida, Nashville, Tampa Bay. Allison, who's better than Columbus in that group of teams I just mentioned?
Of all eight?
Yeah.
Of all seven?
Who's better? Not in the same discussion as Columbus. Which teams are better?
Tampa Bay is better.
Yes.
Your favorite team, Carolina, I think is a challenging team to play.
Do you think Carolina is better than Columbus?
Not in net. They're probably equal defensively. Maybe. But offensively, I think they have an edge.
This is like,
I know you strongly
it's like
disagree,
you're on the
but
stand
you're wrong.
Here. I'm the lawyer.
But
on
you're
the
wrong.
Whole, Carolina Listen, better than Columbus.
I think it's a close call. I can't decide.
Okay, so there's one
you
team.
You hate them, we know. Listen, it's true. They're a good team.
They're a good team. I'll give you that. They can be boring as hell.
But they've gotten it's so much better now.
Oh, I'll take your word for it. So there is one team out of these eight that we can say clearly, definitively is better than Columbus.
I don't know what Dallas is.
Correct. And you know what? Another team here that I don't know about, I think they can be really good, is Nashville. I don't pretend to know what went wrong last year.
Yeah.
They Nashville and Chicago, I think they still get some branding allowances because they were so good for so long that for me, I look at Nashville more than I do Chicago in that respect. And I go, ooh, I don't know if I trust them not being there again. Like there's something about those, I don't know if it's just the organizations and the success they've had the last 8 to 10 years, but it feels like it's kind of silly to discount them. But I think you put Columbus in. I would put Columbus in the cluster below Tampa Bay with Carolina, Dallas, and maybe Nashville.
I know some people who put Florida in that cluster. Now, I personally did not.
Yeah.
But I know some people do.
I just don't know about Florida. Like, I'm not saying it can't happen. I just don't.
I agree.
It's a lot. They've got a lot of ingredients right now. I want to see what it makes.
Agree. Completely.
Because I don't dislike them. And it could happen. I'm not counting them out. I just want to see it turn into something first. And I'm
100%.
I'm not sure that 100%. It can. And Detroit's going in the right direction. But hell, if you're that bad, there is only one direction to go. And to be competitive this year that's a momentous climb for them, given where they were. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So you count nobody out, but I that's clearly the eighth place team to me, but on the rise and more competitive.
Agreed.
So, yeah. I don't know what to do with Dallas. I have no idea what to
Sagan's
do with Dallas.
Out for forever and a day.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, so that's going to be interesting. I wanted to ask you about this too, because Tortorella, as you just mentioned a minute ago, struggled to find the words. He's struggling to find a way to articulate how he wants the Blue Jackets to play. This is a rich topic because safe as death was such a great phrase, and it so wonderfully encapsulated how they played a couple of years ago. Last year, they had to play safe as life.
Mm-hmm.
Safe was life. They had to be really, really smart and careful, and they had to
They didn't change a thing, Porty. They didn't change
young,
a thing.
Wasn't that funny? Like, it depended on what day it was.
Right.
And really, it depended. If you wanted to drag him into the topic, he wasn't having it.
Correct.
If he wanted to go into the topic, he was good with it.
Correct.
But they changed last year. They had to change. It made sense to everybody. It wasn't a crazy maneuver by him. But they wanted to bring those two goalies along until they knew what they had. They couldn't count on their goalies quite like they did with Bobrovsky in years past. Now they feel like they know that Korpisalo and Merzlikins can play. They actually feel like in this schedule, 56 games, it's 115 or 16 days, whatever, that teams with two really good goaltenders are going to have a huge advantage, and that may be the case.
100%.
But they want to open it up a little bit more. So let me put it, I've been thinking about ways, I'm kind of like torts with this, where I'm struggling to come up with the right analogy. It's kind of like not having water pressure. I'm thinking about this and trying to open the valve wider. In other words, just saying you want your team to play more offensive, does that do anything if you don't have the more offensive players? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like you can add more voltage to the light bulb, but if it's a 40-watt light bulb, it can only get so bright. Do they need more? They need more, don't they? Not just letting their players do more. It's not like they've got 30, 35, 40 goal scorers there that they've put reins on because they want them to play defensively, right?
I don't know. I think that there are players like Pierre-Luc Dubois that would benefit from a bigger leash.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all due respect to John Tortorella, because I love his focus on words and I love thinking about him cracking open the slogan. And anyone who's tried to do this, you know, I've tried to do this with companies in the past, coming up with a slogan that works isn't as easy as it sounds. And let's be honest, safe as death was already in his lexicon when That's he got right. here. It's not like he came up with this on right. the fly as this master Absolutely. Thing. So he is struggling, but there is an answer. He just has to find it. And I think that brevity is part of the problem because, as you said, it's open it up, but not totally, but yes, definitely open it up and just a little bit and see what works.
Right.
But I do think there are players who maybe felt a little reined in by it. And I think that there are players who perhaps found themselves feeling like they had to be too defensively responsible. And so maybe their offense didn't suffer, but it hindered it. And because they don't have a super elite high-end offensive forward right now, I think that makes this refocusing all the more important because you have to encourage that offensive side once again because it has to be by committee.
Yeah. And Pierre-Luc is the player that sort of he stopped just short a few times of sort of openly complaining Correct. About how conservative they are.
Correct.
The last couple of years. And you wonder where that goes. So the plan as of now appears to be Texier with Dubois and Bjorkstrand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That leaves the second line probably to have Foligno, Domi, and Atkinson. Now, yes. I hesitate to call that the second line because I think game to game, depending upon which line is going, is going to determine which one's really the first line or which one's the second line. In other words, what's funny? What's that?
That would be the fad line. So it's just a passing fad.
Foligno.
Oh, yes.
Atkinson. Domi. Atkinson. The FDA line. FDA approved. Can they take flight, Allison?
Oh, no. Let me have my
Wait, that's the Food and Drug Administration. Never mind. Mine was better. That's the FFA. Sorry. Yes. Sorry. I think Max Domi's a hell of a player. I think he's a better playmaker than maybe we understand, or maybe I understand. I can only speak for myself. I've seen him as a energy guy and a good offensive player. I don't recognize him as a playmaker. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's really what they need. They've got some finishers. Everybody in the league has finishers. It's the skill, the opening up, and I think that's what John Tortorella means. I think he wants these guys to play with more creativity, more unpredictability, and he tried to beat them into being predictable and relentless and defensively almost perfect last year. Now he wants them to open up a little bit. I think that's going to be a challenge. It's not just to articulate it, but to teach it.
Yeah, and I think that you're right in that Domi, I mean, if you look at some of the, and these are, of course, not, you know, publicly available stats online. These are stats that are tracked by a human, Corey Schneider, who is a tremendous talent and asset to the hockey community. But if you look at players who can effectively pass to high danger areas, Max Domi is right there. One of the top in the league, in fact. And so, yes, I think that he is perhaps not fully credited for being a playmaker. I almost feel like, to me, what I think Torts is struggling to articulate is he's loosening the reins, but not completely.
Yeah.
And I think it's that balance that's important for him. Because I don't know that this group struggles with the creativity. I mean, we see some of it now. Of course, they're missing Nyquist, who I think is one of their more creative forwards. I don't know that they're struggling with the creativity as much as the, yeah, it's okay now, just go try the thing. Giving them permission once again, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. What did you make of John Tortorella's thoughts on Mikhail Grigorenko? That, because I'm looking at the lineup, even with Gustav Nyquist out, and I'm wondering where he fits. They seem to be settled down the middle, with Dubois, Domi, Koivu, Nash. So I don't really see a home there, and I don't think they want to bury Bemström on the fourth line, and I'm not sure where Foodi fits. Maybe Grigorenko's on the third line with Jenner and Koivu. Where does he fit?
Yeah, and I agree with Torts on this. I don't think we know, because we haven't seen the player, particularly in this system and with these players. But it is going to be interesting, because if you start to look at those lineups, you know, where is Bemström? Where is Foodi? I think, and this is no discredit to the player, I think Foodi is probably not going to play every single game. I think there's going to be some, hey, you know, sit back and watch a little bit. Let's recalibrate what you're thinking, just because he's getting acclimated to the game. And now we know in an even crazier schedule than a normal season.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be spaces in the lineup there, but yeah, I don't know who ends up getting scratched more or has a role more. It's going to be very curious.
Yeah. Your thoughts on the taxi squad. So the NHL teams are going to be able to keep with them a 4-to-6-man taxi squad. The idea is to not have tons of travel back and forth from the minor league affiliate. In one of those is going to be a goalie. So expect Matisse Kivlenieks to be with the Blue Jackets, or Vinny Vevelainen to be with them. I think that's going to be interesting, because they may want the goalie to play. They might want Kivlenieks to play. And so he goes to Cleveland. Who do you want to sit in Columbus as the number three? Who, no offense to them, but you hope they don't ever have to use them. So how teams handle that's going to be a little bit different. I'm with you on Foodi. If I go through the forward list, so I did some work the other day, like what's this camp roster going to look like?
Right.
And Torts has talked about how he wants five lines, so 15 forwards. He wants 8D, so four pair, and two goalies in the NHL group that they train with. And the rest will be sort of on their own. So that's 25 guys at NHL camp. And then 11 players sort of off to their own, working and trying to get their way up to the NHL camp. But, you know, how do you handle this taxi squad? This is a question for Jarmo Kekalainen, but he's busy right now. Liam Foodi, do you want Liam Foodi nearby and not playing? Or do you want him playing, assuming the AHL can get going? And I think that goes for Kevin Stenlund, too. I'm just looking at forwards. That certainly goes for Cole right. Sherwood. These are guys that would be on the bubble. Nathan Gerby is the type that you keep in your taxi squad, a guy you can plug. Stefan Matteau, a veteran minor league guy, even Ryan McGinnis, Zach Dalpe. These are the guys you keep, my opinion, on the taxi squad. You keep them near. They don't have to play. These aren't guys you have huge plans for down the line, but they're veteran players who can step in. Or, Allison, would you turn it over to the likes of Foodi, to the likes of Jacob Christensen on defense? Do you put your best of the best and keep them close, or do you strategize based on who needs to be playing?
And you can change out the taxi squad, correct?
Well, I think
that
you
was
can,
my
but
understanding.
I think the idea is to not do that very often, because that would defeat the purpose entirely.
Because there was talk I had read as well that, you know, and just cautioned everyone who sometimes you see someone's on waivers and you lose your mind and worry.
Yeah.
There's also going to be a lot of waiver movements that are truly paper moves to help manage the cap this year. Correct?
Well, that's true. But you can lose that player on waivers.
Right. For sure.
100%. Whether it's a paper move or not. So they wouldn't be leaving Columbus. But so the way the taxi squad is going to work is if you would need waivers. So use Gerby as an example. He's a veteran player. In order to send him to Cleveland, because he's now technically on the Blue Jackets roster.
Right.
When roster's set at the end of camp, in order to get him to Cleveland, he would have to clear waivers.
Right.
So in order to put him on the taxi squad, they would have to clear him through waivers just as always. But he could absolutely be claimed. I don't think I'd have to go look through notes here. Stefan Matteau would have to clear waivers for sure. Dalpy for sure. I don't think Stenlund. I know Foodie wouldn't. McGinnis probably would at this point. But those guys could absolutely be snatched up by other teams. And it would be just like in the normal setting. If they snatched them up, they'd have to keep them on their NHL roster too.
Right.
Because they didn't clear waivers to be sent to the minors. So there's going to be some juggling there. But I wonder how you would handle the taxi squad. Is it a holding tank or is it a reward for guys that are close?
Well, I mean, we've seen call-ups in traditional seasons that are both, right? Yeah. Reward this kid and let him come up and see the NHL life just because he's been playing well, even though we know he's not going to play. I think this is another strategy that's going to evolve as the season goes. I mean, who would have thought 2 years ago, the best players in the AHL couldn't buy a spot in the lineup, even if they were leading the team in goals and points and everything else, because everyone was playing so well and healthy. Last year, you're signing guys just to field an NHL roster.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think that health is going to dictate these choices. And I think that the other thing, of course, that's going to matter is just going to be more prominent in our faces is where the team sits in the standings. Because here's the thing. This schedule is so brutal. We talk about the goaltenders all the time, and that's valuable when we talk about workload. But I don't know many skaters who have seen a season like this. So this taxi squad might end up being a mix of both, because if you're playing, I'm looking here at 1 week and I think there's 5 games in 8 days. I mean, fresh legs is a huge asset there, right?
Yeah,
so, right. That's where I can see the taxi squad truly being for the best guys, because I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how many guys play every game this season.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah. And Torts was interesting too. He doesn't like morning skates.
Yeah.
But he mentioned maybe bringing them back this year, perhaps out of necessity, if it means giving guys a full day away from the rink.
Right.
And then on game day, having a morning skate that is actually instructional, not just get the blood flow, but an instructional light work practice before the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be so many ramifications from all of this. Anything else we need to get to, Allison, before I ask you three very difficult, meaningful questions as we head to break?
I was not primed for this. I think we're good.
Okay. Here's the beginning of the series questions. How many Cheryl's cookies could you eat in one sitting?
Okay, now there's an important qualifying question I have.
Yeah.
Are these original Cheryl's cookies or are these the Cheryl's cookies under the new owner?
Oh.
And what kind are they? If they're the frosted sugar cookies, I can eat them until I die.
I hold before me, it's a shame we're not at the ring tonight because I'd be bringing them, the buttercream frosted cutout cookie.
Yes, I can eat 8,000.
Really? Okay. Because I'm like limit. I shouldn't say that because I'm limit. I think I'm limit two.
That's unexpected.
Because they're very rich.
That's a failure.
They're extremely rich. Okay, favorite Christmas song, not him. I'm going to delineate between the Christmas carol, which to me is like a religious Christmas song.
Yes.
Versus a Christmas song, secular, like Rudolph versus, say, O Come Emmanuel.
Favorite Christmas song, and I will not be hearing arguments at this time.
No. It's an opinion.
It's a fact. from John Denver and the Muppets, A Christmas Together, The Peace Carol.
Now, that's a strong choice. Can I ask you to tell the John Denver story? It's a great story. I like the Christmas song that begins with chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Well, that's the name of the song.
Christmas song.
Isn't it?
No, I think it's called Christmas song.
That is true.
We're going to get to the John Denver story because I personally love John Denver, which is not always cool.
I adore John Denver.
I love him. You have a personal connection. Favorite Christmas hymn?
Oh, Holy Night, sung by Josh Groban.
Oh, see, I'm Oh, Holy Night sung by anyone.
That's fair.
With O Come Emmanuel, very close.
Hark the Herald Angels Sing is my second.
Beautiful. And I mean, nothing beats Silent Night with in a darkened sanctuary with candles. Pretty nice.
I just have heard it so much. I go for a little bit off the beaten path.
I understand. Yes. It's the amazing grace of Christmas songs.
It is.
For sure. Okay, to John Denver, and then we'll wrap.
No. I think the people have to say they want to hear the story.
No,
I
can't trust me. The people are here. They want to hear the story. You can't drag them on like this. You're in Aspen. You're in Aspen.
Oh, my God. This is so horrifying.
It's all the best. So it's the greatest story.
I don't just tell this story to anyone, Porty. This is embarrassing.
We can back up. We don't have
to. If you want to hear the John Denver story, let Porty or I know on Twitter, and I will tell the John Denver story the next time we record.
You know they're going to want to.
Well, they have to prove it.
You're playing to the crowd now. All right. All right. It's a great story. All right. I guess we'll for sure see and talk to you next time then. That'll be next week. And Allison, anything to add?
I would just like to wish everyone a safe and happy holidays. I know it looks different, but find some joy, find some peace, and stay focused. We'll get through this together, and I hope everyone can find some happiness in these next few days, or perhaps you've already shared that as part of a Hanukkah celebration or some other way you celebrate. So happy holidays to all.
Well, amen to all of that. I echo those thoughts and sentiments. Also, if you get Blue Jacket swag for Christmas, by all means, tweet it out and let us
Except
know
about
those
it. New jerseys. Don't tweet them.
Reverse retro. Thanks for listening so much. We'll be back with you next week. Thanks to our producer, Danielle Lehman. Thanks to all who make the show possible. And we will talk to you very, very soon. Take care.